I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape. And a new theater company debuted this week. They opened with It Had to Be You, running through August 1st at the Jewish Community Center. And we want to welcome the director, Sidney Grossberg-Ronga, and actors, Steli Seitman and Jerry Vogel. Welcome to Cityscape, all of you.
Hi, Steve.
Thanks.
And this group goes back a long way. In fact, I understand there's some connection between Ladue High School and East Side Strip Clubs, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that a little later.
Oh, you don't know that?
You don't know that story, Jerry?
Oh, oh my.
Entertain yeah. me.
Yeah.
We'll save that for later if that's
yeah.
all right.
Uh-huh.
You know, It Had to Be You. I'm not familiar with it. When I first heard it, I guess, you know, I remember the old song, so I was thinking an old show, but the play's not really old.
No, it's from the early 80s. It's by Renee Taylor and Joseph Bologna, who are a couple, obviously. And it's not really autobiographical, but you very much hear their voices if you're familiar with the two of them at all. I don't hear their voices anymore. Now I hear Steli and Jerry. But when you first read it, you kind of hear their rhythms.
And it's a comedy.
Oh, yeah, very much so. They're both incredibly funny. So.
And tell me about this new theater company, Max and Louis Productions. How did that all come about?
Well, Steli started the company actually. They did a few cabarets and used Max and Louis as the production company name.
Oh.
And so when we were talking about doing this, I said, well, should we just keep using that? And so we sent off and got a darling little logo. Tell them who Max and Louis are.
Max and Louis are two cute little Bichon Frises. My two little boys.
Those are puppies for people
producers.
That don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're puppies. Bichon Frises.
They're very
little dumb. Hairy things, right?
Little hairy
oh,
things.
Yeah. They're the producers.
So what was your idea on starting a new theater company? I mean, you know, you have to have a vision for that, right?
Yes, and we talked about it a lot. I mean, Steli and I have been talking about doing a play together for a long, 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 long time. And timing was always difficult. I live in New York and have a daughter who is now at Webster University, which now frees my time up a lot. But we've been talking about it for a while and looking for plays and trying to figure out. And at first, we were just going to do a show together. And then the more we started talking about it, we realized that we'd like to explore that this would continue on. And the more we talked about what was important to us in the theater, the more we realized that laughter has a lot to do with it. So our goal is to always give the audience plenty of opportunity to laugh, which this play certainly does, because I think humor is often overlooked in general in theater and film, and it's not taken as seriously. It's, you know, whatever. But also, even in dramatic plays, a lot of times, good writers include humor, and often in production that gets kind of overlooked because it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a time when laughter's important. Sullivan's Travels is my all-time favorite movie, and that really speaks well to that. It's, you know, all about, ooh, this director who's going to go and make his first serious movie because he's always directed comedy. And by the time he's ready to really do this, he's learned that maybe allowing people to laugh is more important than telling them what's going on in the world, because mm-hmm. there are other venues for that as well.
All right. Jerry, you've worked around town a lot. I think mm-hmm. you've done things with the Rep and Upstream and St. Louis Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
right?
With the festival and St. Louis Shakespeare.
How'd you get drawn into this?
Oh, I came and auditioned.
Absolutely.
And it was actually, I tell people now that it was one of my favorite auditions of all time.
Why?
Well, because in the very first moment, we just sort of made each other laugh. And it was this immediate connection. And when it was over, I've never had this experience before. I walked out and I said, if I didn't get that part, I don't know why. I got that.
Yeah, he blew me away. I was instantly attracted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew right away.
I felt it, you know?
And in a two-person play, yeah. it's all about chemistry, you know, so Sidney saw that and said, yeah. well, okay, let's go.
That's yeah. right. Sidney, I guess when you're casting a play with two people, there's no margin for error.
No, there's really not. And I have to say, in all honesty, because I haven't directed in St. Louis in almost 15 years, I had no idea what I was going to find, to be honest. You know, I've I'm from St. Louis, and I come back and I see things at the Rep occasionally, and a lot of times it's primarily actors coming out from New York, and so I didn't know what I'd find. And I have to say, I auditioned, I think, 8 or 9 actors, and I had options. I mean, I saw some amazing, amazing actors, and I was thrilled. And I think St. Louis is really growing a strong theater community now, which it wasn't when I was back here in the early 90s. The theater seemed to be waning a little bit. So I was really excited to see, because I'm thinking, okay, how many actors in their 50s am I going to find that are worth putting on a stage here, you know?
You know, that's interesting when she says actors in their 50s, because when they wrote this play originally, it was for their age range, which was in their 30s. But I think having these characters played by older people in their 50s, senior citizens, if you will, Jerry.
Barely, just barely.
Yeah, I mean, makes the play a lot more poignant.
Well, and the original people did the same thing, didn't they, when they were even older than their 50s, I think.
Oh, yeah, they did it. I don't know.
They did it recently.
They did,
I think,
but, well, no, they did it more below, recently, yeah, no, when they were in their
they're in their 70s,
70s
now.
You know?
Yeah, they still tour this, I think, in Florida.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think. I think they're doing.
They are young in Florida. So.
You get a real sense of desperation for these characters, you know, because this is our last chance to find love and success in our lives.
Well, let's set it up then, since you kind of allude to the plot there.
Right.
Stelly, you play a woman who's a sort of B-movie actress down on her luck.
Yes, I would say.
Tell me about her.
Yeah, she's a struggling, failed, second-rate B-movie actress. She's
can
a
you
health
Can you relate to that at all? No, I'm just kidding.
Gee, I don't know. Do you think so? Could this play be semi-autobiographical for me? Maybe that's why I chose it. I know she's a health nut. She's an analyst. She's a wannabe playwright. And she's desperately seeking love and success in New York. And she auditions for Vito Pignoli, who is a highly successful TV commercial producer, and fails the audition, but
Meets you.
Tell me about Vito, Jerry.
Well, Vito is he's a guy who kind of compromised himself 20 years ago for success. He wanted to be a writer and a director, but he ended up in commercials, and it has not been fulfilling.
He's not proud of that, huh?
Well, he's been a good success, but it's kind of led him to a life that ultimately he finds out is not that fulfilling. And it's part of the romantic comedy element of this is that through my being held hostage by this crazy woman, there's a little fatal attraction thing that goes on for a while. She scares me, but eventually we find a connection. Yeah.
So, Stella, your character auditions for Jerry.
Yes.
Doesn't get the part. So how does the spark start between them, and what happens?
Well,
she locks me in. That's what you know to start with.
Yeah, if it's packed with all sorts of surrealistic, quirky turns, shouldn't I surprise you? Shouldn't you come see the play?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't you think the audience? I don't want to.
Yeah,
tell
we
the
don't want to give too much away. But But the moment she meets him, she's attracted to him, and that was what when we auditioned Jerry. That's when I knew it had to be him because
I felt the spark.
I saw it.
Are you dating now?
I don't know. Our partners both would be a little interested to hear that. But.
I don't think our wives would like that too much. Oh, dear. Did you say that?
Oh, my.
I think you can.
Thank you.
You know, you bring that up and it's kind of funny. Isn't it odd how, in all seriousness, though, when two people work on a show together, particularly a two-person show, I would think. Yeah. It's not necessarily romance, but there really sure is a bond, a closeness that develops, even if it ends when the play ends.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something special about that. Talk about that.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'll tell you something. For me, Steve, you know, every night it's different. When I fall in love with him in that play, you know, it's always going to be different. And I think every night, I told Jerry this, it's going to get deeper and deeper, and we're going to find more and more things, which is what's going to keep this play really alive for me.
Well, that's what, you know, what's the fun is in any comedy is kind of riding the waves of the finding the humor. And we approached it in a very organic way. We're not going for the ba-dum-bump laughs. We are connecting to each other and hopefully finding the humor that comes out of the relationships. So that depends on that connection constantly being fresh every night, and that's what we do.
You know, I was reading about the original two actors that you mentioned that did this originally, and if I read it correctly, Stelly, the actress that played your part, said something about how during the play, during each run, she sort of found herself that moment when she fell in love with the other character at a different time, and maybe she kind of changed it up a little bit.
And that's
what
I'm saying.
Can you explain that to me?
Well, that's what I'm saying, because it just changes it evolves all the time. It's not a by rote thing. It depends on what Jerry's giving me, you know, and it changes. Like the other night, it was when you were, you know, talking about your son and able to come to grips with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't give away a plot point.
No, but that's okay. But what's interesting and what's important is that the minute they meet, there's a connection in the play. The minute he walks out, he's already connected to her in some way because, you know, I mean, I've done lots of auditions where I don't really go out and talk to people afterwards. I hide until they all go away. So, you know, the fact that he comes out to talk to her means there's some interest right away. And her reaction to him, but then it becomes deeper as they struggle through a rather long, snowy evening. And I think that you probably are the same way. There are, well, his falling in love is kind of written into the script, but it there's a range there.
No, definitely.
You know, that's interesting what she just said about that because, you know, this is a two-character play that takes place in real time. And I was reading that originally when they wrote this, They didn't know whether to make this within a week's time, a two-week time, 3 days, but they found that by making it happen in one night, it made the feelings all that more intense,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting.
Yeah, because the playwrights wrote it for themselves to do. You know, I mean, luckily they're wonderful playwrights, and so because often when somebody writes something for themselves, it doesn't really survive other performers, you know, it's just so for them. But Taylor and Bologna are wonderful writers, and their plays are all, they have a lot of wonderful plays that are good for other
people.
Yeah,
you mentioned them by their last names.
Renee Taylor. And Joseph Bologna.
Right. And she was cast something people would be familiar with. I
read
it somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was Nanny Fine's mother in The Nanny.
Right.
So she was Sylvia Fine for however many millions of years. And Joe Bologna did,
my
I think,
favorite
one
year
or two.
Was my favorite movie that she's ever done.
What was it?
My Favorite Year. It's kind of based on the Your Show of Shows.
Oh, yeah.
We had Peter O'Toole in it. He played the Sid Caesar character, and he was hilarious.
Sydney, was there any time during rehearsals? Did you have problems with any part that wasn't working at all?
Well, there were lots of things. You know, I mean, that's the fun of rehearsal. If it all works the first day, then there's no need for me whatsoever. But the fun of this process, I mean, partly because we all do have the same training. We are all graduates of Webster College, now university. The fun was exploring these characters because they were written by the playwrights for themselves to play. So we found some things that we had to justify to ourselves, mm-hmm. because they knew in their heads what it all meant, but we had to figure it out in our heads what their backgrounds were that led them to a place where they could fall in love in 12 hours.
Okay, listen, I want to ask you this before we're out of time,
sure.
too, since I alluded to this in the beginning.
Oh, yeah, come on, I want to hear this.
I really think this deserves an explanation. You talked about, Sydney, how you and Stelly go back
to
high school. So back in Ladue High School, you were cast, I guess it was in Gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
We were the strippers.
And so that led to a trip to the East Side now.
Oh, yes.
Tell me
about
that.
Well, we were working with a group called Summer Theater Players, and our dear friend Leslie Eberhard was directing us in Gypsy. And we were young and had not been, I mean, I was 16. We had not been to strip clubs. And we kind of decided we needed to see what that was about, you know? So we went over to the East Side, and there's a third stripper. So the three of us and Leslie, I don't think anyone else went with us. I think it was just the four of us, went over to the East Side and got ourselves into a strip club and sat there kind of bizarrely fascinated doing research for the play.
And then remember Evelyn West and her $50,000 treasure chest under Bolivar. I had to check her out, too.
Yeah.
We actually got an ad from the Stardust.
Yes, we did.
In the program.
In the program. We got an ad from the Stardust.
Yeah.
Stardust
I'm curious, Jerry, if you've done any research along those lines.
Wow.
Whoa. Actually, for my character, Vito, he's kind of a graduate from what we call the Peter Pan principle.
Uh-huh.
You know, men who never grow up. And actually, I did live through that, so I understood that.
So you know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing I'm curious about, Sydney, in your connection with the Jewish Community Center, don't you do some classes and workshops over there?
I was offering classes, and they didn't actually happen because I didn't get it together to offer them soon enough, I suspect. I did when I was in high school. I taught classes at the JCC. It was the JCCA back then. I do teach in New York quite a bit and coach privately. And when I was living here a while back, I taught classes. Steli took them, actually.
I see. So are you here just for the – did you come to, like, do the show and keep an eye on your daughter at Webster?
No, I actually came. I came to do this show while she was – most of the time she was in New York, although she is helping us run the show right now. It was kind of that interesting thing of we picked her up, brought her back to New York, and then I came back out here to do the show.
So she in the theater as well?
Yes, she's Lansbury. A stage manager.
Oh.
And so she went back to do a project in New York right after school was over. And one of her friends actually is stage managing our show. And then she came back to help run it.
All right. Let's remind people that it's a new theater company, Max and Louis Productions. It Had to Be You is their show. It opened this week, running through August the 1st at the Jewish Community Center on Millstone Campus Drive. If you'd like ticket information, we have an 800 number, 800-838-3006. If you go to stlpublicradio.org, the Cityscape page, we'll have that information and a link to Max and Louis Productions to their website. So best of luck in the future with this new endeavor, and it's we wish you all the best.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks so much.
We've been talking to actors Steli Seitman and Jerry Vogel and the director of the show, Sydney Grossberg-Ranga. This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio, and right now, commentator Bob Archibald has some thoughts on sharing humanity through the generations.
The past is inscrutable in many ways. In the collections of the Missouri History Museum, we have a framed sketch of a soldier in a Civil War uniform. We know his name is Elijah Madison and that he was born a slave in 1841, lived on a plantation near St. Louis, and joined the colored infantry of the Union Army at Jefferson Barracks in 1863. His descendants, who gave us the sketch, told us, and available documents in our curator's research added other facts to their story. We can learn more. There is much we can never know, and much more we can only surmise. All we have of the past is what has been hauled into the present, what has survived through happenstance or deliberate preservation in objects, documents, and stories. But we do know that Elijah Madison, even when he was in bondage, could feel joy in a spring morning, pleasure in friendship, sadness at a loss, fear in danger. We know all that and more because Elijah Madison, despite vast differences in years and circumstances, was a human being, and his feelings and failings, his very humanity, is not much removed from ours. We can and we must explore the humanity we share with the generations that have gone before us and sustain it for the generations to come after us. Thus, Elijah Madison's story becomes our story, too. This is Bob Archibald.
Bob Archibald is president and CEO of the Missouri History Museum. And it's time now for a look at the Cityscape calendar. Third Degree Glass Factory's Third Friday Open House features selections from Union Avenue Opera's production of Pirates of Penzance and music by the Maple Jam Band, in addition to glass-blowing demonstrations and other entertainment. That's tonight from 6 until 10 at Third Degree on Del Mar. Beverly Brennan presents St. Louis Woman, a Cabaret, what it was like being Jack Buck's daughter growing up on the hill in the 50s and 60s with Harry Carey and Joe Garagiola in Old St. Louis and living and teaching in the city for 30 years. That's tonight and tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, in the Kranzberg Arts Center on Grand at Olive. Stages St. Louis's production of Promises, Promises opens tonight at 8 and will continue through August 15th at the Robert G. Rhyme Theater in Kirkwood. Oboist Kathy Webling-Paul joins James Richards and the Gateway Festival Orchestra in Bach to Basics, featuring UMSL professor Barbara Harbach's Rhapsody Zardenne for oboe and strings, Sunday evening, 7:30, in Washington University's Brookings Quadrangle. And the Show Me Sound organization presents its fourth annual World Percussion Theater, Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock at the Sheldon Concert Hall. And details about these and other events can be found on the events section of our website, stlpublicradio.org. Next week on Cityscape, we'll talk with author Jane Smiley about her new book, Private Lives. Then join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he and his guests will talk about the new energy conservation plan in St. Louis County. Archive versions of past Cityscape programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and engineered by Aaron Dorr and Toby Allen. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.